Welcome to Food for Thought, sponsored by Carlson Laboratories. Listen now as your host, Jolie Root, sifts through medical research and expert opinions for practical advice to help you take control of your health naturally and live well every day. And now, here's your host, Jolie Root.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Food for Thought. I've got a big show ahead, so I'm going to launch right into all the great nutrition information that I've collected for you this week, and there has been a lot of nutrition in the news. So let's lead with heart failure. If you know anyone that has heart failure, it is no party, let me tell you. It's a leading cause of death here in America and worldwide. And it happens when the heart doesn't pump blood effectively to meet the body's oxygen demands. You might have a cough. You might have swelling in your extremities, your ankles, your feet, the calves of your legs, your hands. You may be weak. You may have difficulty breathing. Shortness of breath is a big symptom of heart failure. And heart failure isn't the same as a heart attack. It's not something that happens immediately. It develops over time. But again, it's a serious matter. Well, here was something that I thought was very interesting. It's not the first time. And I've talked about this over the years, coenzyme Q10. Coenzyme Q10, which is sometimes called ubiquinol or ubiquinone, those are a couple of forms of CoQ10, it's an energy factor, and it really supports the health of the heart. Well, the headline is, CoQ10 prevents heart failure. This is a strong statement. What happens is CoQ10 can help people with congestive heart failure because it improves the heart's pumping ability. It might even reduce the need for medications. This came from a study out of Denmark. It showed that CoQ10 drastically lowered deaths related to heart failure. So let's look at this a little bit closer, because that is a big deal. CoQ10 reduces cardiac deaths by 50%. Here's what happened. Scientists recruited 420 heart failure patients with later stages of heart failure, stages 3 and 4, and they monitored their condition for 2 years. The patients were assigned to take 100 milligrams of CoQ10 three times a day, or a placebo, and they tracked them for major cardiovascular events. And a major cardiovascular event is a heart-related emergency. According to the results, CoQ10 supplementation decreased the risk of major cardiovascular events by 50%. And only half as many patients died in the CoQ10 group compared to the placebo group. So let's look at the real numbers on this. It was 420 heart failure patients. In that period of time, the 2 years of follow-up, 36 patients in the placebo group passed away. Only 18 died in the CoQ10 group, and hospitalizations also decreased significantly in the CoQ10 group. In heart failure studies, this is the first compound, CoQ10 is the first compound to produce such a pronounced effect in over a decade. The lead investigator in this study recommended CoQ10 as part of standard treatment for heart failure patients. I would not waste another minute. If you are in any stage of heart failure, 300 milligrams a day of CoQ10 is something that is accessible, it's affordable, it's absolutely safe. CoQ10 is a major fat-soluble antioxidant that protects your brain. It protects all of the cell membranes from an aging mechanism called lipid peroxidation. CoQ10 stabilizes the cell membranes. It works very well together with vitamin E, which, remember, we heard last week that high cholesterol and high triglycerides blocks vitamin E in the body. So if you're a lipid patient with either high triglycerides or high cholesterol, you really need to boost your vitamin E intake. And vitamin E and CoQ10 work together to protect against oxidation of LDL cholesterol, which is one of the drivers of atherosclerotic disease processes in the blood vessel. What we're talking about here is saving lives. Now, CoQ10 is found in almost every cell of the human body. Its job is to convert food into energy. The heart needs a continual source of energy in the form of CoQ10 to work optimally. And people that have heart failure have decreased levels of CoQ10 in their bodies, and they have worse outcomes. A lot of these patients take cholesterol-lowering drugs, statins. And here's the problem. Statins deplete CoQ10. So that's another takeaway from this story. If you take a cholesterol-lowering medication, or if you're on a blood pressure medication in the beta blocker family, those deplete coenzyme Q10. Even estrogen replacement therapy depletes CoQ10. And this is not something that any of us can afford. So there are a lot of medications that have the unfortunate adverse impact of depleting CoQ10 in the body. And that costs, because CoQ10 improves breathing, it improves exercise capacity, it decreases chest pain, and it improves the quality of life in heart failure patients, not to mention saving lives in heart failure patients, and no significant side effects. So again, CoQ10, ubiquinol, ubiquinone, it doesn't really matter. If you take ubiquinone, which is less expensive, it converts to ubiquinol. If you're over the age of 40, you might want to pop for the little bit more expensive CoQ10, the ubiquinol, but at 300 milligrams a day, either form is going to be very beneficial. It's just a phenomenal product, and if you have heart conditions, you need to be on coenzyme Q10. So that's an exciting study. Now, I don't know if you've heard of CBD. CBD is cannabidiol. It's a cannabinoid, and it can be derived from marijuana, but it can also be derived from hemp. And it is trying to find its way in this kind of complicated world of state-by-state differences of either approval of medical marijuana or approval of recreational marijuana. But cannabidiol from hemp is not a scheduled substance. However, it's in an early stage of coming into the marketplace as a supplement or as something that you can take. And the supplement companies are understandably very cautious about embracing cannabidiol, but here's a reason why maybe we want to think about cannabidiol. We're talking about CBD. It is not a psychoactive cannabinoid, but there was a very interesting report of CBD and the THC cannabinoids inhibiting glioma brain cancer growth. This was a very compelling study. It was published in the journal Molecular Cancer Therapeutics. It adds to the growing evidence that marijuana possesses medical properties and probably should be legally available for medicinal purposes. This was at the Department of Oncology, the Division of Clinical Sciences at St. George's, University of London. They were looking at THC and cannabidiol, both by themselves and in combination with radiation therapy on glioma cells in vitro and in laboratory mice. Gliomas are a type of brain and spine cancer. It's one of the most aggressive forms of cancer in humans. It takes its name, glioma, from the glial cells in the brain and the spine that these tumors originate in. Glial cells are the tissue that surrounds and supports neurons in the brain and in the spine, and there are more glioma sites in the brain. And they found a good dose combination of 7 millimolars, this is a measure of amount of substance concentration, each, of THC and CBD, and it minimized the psychoactive effects of the THC, but still maintained the anti-cancer effectiveness. Using THC and CBD was more effective together. They would have had to have used bigger doses of one or the other to get a 50% kill rate on the glioma cancer cells. But here's what happened. Radiation alone had no dramatic effect on reducing tumor growth, but the combination of THC and CBD was more effective. And when they put the THC, the CBD, and radiation together, it stopped tumor growth in the mice for the rest of the study. What they noted was that the combination of THC and CBD made the glioma cells more susceptible to the radiation because of an increase in markers of apoptosis, that's cell death, in the cancer cells. So, however you feel about the possible ending of prohibition of the use of marijuana, medical marijuana deserves more attention and more research dollars. How exciting if we were able to find a successful treatment for what is a very, very deadly cancer. Now, if you don't love your belly, then you need to hate diet soda. There was a new study that was published in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society. It indicated a direct link between the consumption of diet soda and an increase in belly fat. Diet soda increases belly fat. Diet soda is not your friend. There was a direct link between the consumption of diet soda and an increase in abdominal obesity in people 65 years of age and older. Weight gain leads to a greater risk of metabolic syndrome and cardiovascular disease. Metabolic syndrome is something I talk about all the time on Food for Thought. It's the prevalence of a certain set of biomarkers that indicate a disorder of energy balance and fat storage in the body. It's a precursor of ill health, leading to things like diabetes and heart disease. And the markers are belly fat, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and unhealthy levels of glucose. High triglyceride is another marker. And this sequela of imbalances in adults, and by the way, metabolic syndrome happens to children too. Well, it's a huge concern because of the health and the economic impact of this on our population. So University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio set up a study. They called it the San Antonio Longitudinal Study of Aging, abbreviated it's SALSA. I like that. They looked at the effects of diet soda consumption over a period of 10 years. The subjects were over the age of 65, mixed ethnicity. They were Mexican and European American. Earlier studies have looked at middle age and younger adults, and they found that belly fat was directly related to diet soda intake. And you know what? In 30 years, artificial sweetener and diet soda intake has increased. Adults are trying not to weigh too much. They're trying to get past this epidemic of obesity, but diet drinks actually make obesity worse, and the worst place of all, right there around your waist, right there, that belly that you're not in love with. Water with lemon, unsweetened iced tea, green tea, but not diet soda if you don't love your belly. This is Food for Thought. I'll be right back after these messages from my sponsor, Carlson Laboratories. Please stay with me.
It's hard to assure your kids are getting enough nutrients, especially those tricky omega-3s. Kids, in particular, need omega-3 oils in Carlson for Kids Cod Liver Oil because they are crucial for brain and vision development, as well as cardiovascular health. Higher levels of omega-3 fats from fish support better learning. Carlson for Kids Cod Liver Oil supplies 590 milligrams of omega-3 fatty acids in each serving. It has a delicious lemon flavor that kids love. It tastes great on its own or mixed in your child's favorite food or beverage. You can give your children Carlson for Kids Cod Liver Oil with confidence because all Carlson fish oils are tested for purity, potency, and freshness by an independent FDA-registered laboratory. Look for the purity guarantee right on the label. Be sure your children are getting the omega-3s they need with Carlson for Kids Cod Liver Oil. Look for it at your favorite natural food store today.
Why is vitamin D so important? Because it supports and promotes calcium absorption, healthy bones, healthy mood, cardiovascular health, and a healthy immune system. Are you getting enough vitamin D? It's important to us. Carlson features many products with vitamin D, including vitamin D soft gelatin capsules, liquid drops, and vitamin D in combination with fish oils. Carlson provides natural vitamin D3 to support healthy body levels of vitamin D. Ask for Carlson Vitamin D at finer health food stores today. Or go to CarlsonLabs.com to find the location of the store nearest you. Carlson is an easy way to get your vitamin D.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. Before we get away from that commercial break, talking about vitamin D and talking about Carlson Laboratories, full disclosure, I am the nutritionist and educator at Carlson Laboratories. My sponsor is also my employer, so you should know that there is a relationship there. And the reason for that relationship is because it's basically a match made in heaven. It's an awesome company. Before I went to work for them, I was in the natural product industry, and I'm a licensed nutritionist. I'm also a nurse. And it was my respect for the way that they handled themselves and for the priorities that they had that finally allowed me to go over and get involved professionally with Carlson. And what I want to say about them is happy anniversary, Carlson. They are celebrating their 50th anniversary this year. 50 years marketing the highest quality dietary supplements, specialty formulations, omega-3s, and yes, vitamin D. So happy anniversary, Carlson. It's the golden anniversary. Gotta celebrate. Here was a study, or actually a story, that came out this week, and bravo, I'm so glad to see it. And here's what it comes from. It comes from the Institute of Medicine and their recommended dietary allowances for vitamin D. So researchers are pushing back against that, and among them, some of the leading researchers in vitamin D science, researchers at University of California, San Diego, and also Creighton University have challenged the intake of vitamin D recommended by the National Academy of Sciences Institute of Medicine, stating that their recommended dietary allowance for vitamin D underestimates the need by a factor of 10. In a letter that was published last week in the journal Nutrients, the scientists confirmed a calculation error noted by other investigators and something that I've been griping about now for a couple of years. By using a data set from a different population, Dr. Cedric Garland, I'm proud to call him a friend of mine, he's the adjunct professor at UC San Diego's Department of Family Medicine and Public Health. He's also one of the participants in the Moore Cancer Treatment Center there. He said his group was able to confirm findings published by the University of Alberta School of Public Health that were reported last October in this journal, Nutrients. The study suggested that the Institute of Medicine underestimated the requirement substantially. The error has broad implications for public health regarding disease prevention and achieving the stated goal of ensuring that the whole population has enough vitamin D to maintain, among other things, bone health. The intake of vitamin D specified by the Institute of Medicine is 600 units a day through age 70 and 800 units for older ages. Dr. Garland says, calculations by us and other researchers have shown that these doses are only about one-tenth of those needed to cut incidence of diseases related to vitamin D deficiency. Robert Haney, MD of Creighton University, wrote, "We call for the National Academy of Sciences Institute of Medicine and all public health authorities concerned with transmitting accurate nutritional information to the public to designate as the RDA a value of approximately 7,000 units per day from all sources. That intake is well below the upper level intake specified by Institute of Medicine as safe for teens and adults, which is 10,000 units a day." This is something that I cannot stress enough. When you listen to recommendations of 400, 600, 800 units of vitamin D, if you were to follow those recommendations and then go get your vitamin D levels measured, you would probably be down somewhere below 10 nanograms per milliliter. That is a severe deficiency level, you most likely need 4,000 or more units daily of vitamin D to get yourself to 30 nanograms per milliliter, which is the beginning of normal. And the normal range ranges from 30 nanograms per milliliter to 100 nanograms per milliliter. And being somewhere in the mid-range of that brings about, from epidemiology studies, dramatic reductions in risks of, yes, bone issues, but also heart disease, cancer, and other major issues. So let's look at other vitamin D in the news this week. Washington University School of Medicine suggests that vitamin D plays a major role in preventing the inflammation that leads to type 2 diabetes and atherosclerosis. Further, the way key immune cells behave without adequate vitamin D may provide scientists with new therapeutic targets for patients with type 2 diabetes and atherosclerosis. This was a study that appeared yesterday in the journal Cell Reports. What they did was studied mice that lacked the ability to process vitamin D in immune cells involved in inflammation, and they found that those mice made excess glucose, became resistant to insulin, and accumulated plaques in their blood vessels. Does that sound familiar? Who else does that? Oh, yeah, humans, the overwhelming majority of us. The finding that vitamin D helps to regulate glucose metabolism may explain previous epidemiological studies in identifying an increased risk of diabetes in patients with vitamin D deficiency, said the senior investigator, who's an associate professor of medicine in cell biology and physiology. In their study, inactivation of the vitamin D receptor induced diabetes and atherosclerosis, so normalizing vitamin D levels may have the opposite effect. In addition, inadequate vitamin D turned immune cells into transporters of fat. So this helps researchers better understand how diabetes and atherosclerosis are linked, and it also provides new possibilities for therapy, like, well, correcting vitamin D deficiencies. For years, researchers have been studying vitamin D's possible roles in inflammation and inflammatory diseases, such as type 2 diabetes and atherosclerosis. They engineered mice without the vitamin D receptor on important immune cells called monocytes and macrophages. We all have thousands and thousands of those. And they were able to learn how diabetes and atherosclerosis, plaque and damage in the blood vessels, are linked. The monocytes are made by white blood cells. They're made in the bone marrow. They circulate in the bloodstream, and they move into the body's tissues where they mature into cells called macrophages. Macrophages gobble up things like bacteria and tumor cells and viruses. When they inactivated the vitamin D receptor on these immune cells, it promoted inflammation in the liver and in the blood vessel walls. And it increased the ability of those monocytes in the blood to stick to and penetrate and migrate into blood vessel walls, where they deposited cholesterol and secreted inflammatory substances, and that leads to diabetes and heart disease. Getting enough vitamin D may reduce those properties in immune cells. We know that vitamin D is an anti-inflammatory. Having adequate vitamin D very likely reduces the onset of a combination of heart disease and diabetes, which the two of those together are referred to as cardiometabolic disease. And this is an epidemic in North America. And by the way, insufficient vitamin D levels is also something that is true of the majority of people in North America. I go to medical conferences and talk to doctors and help to educate doctors on, among other things, the benefits of things like vitamin D, coenzyme Q10, and vitamin E, and omega-3s. And when the doctors start talking to me about vitamin E, they say to me, "I'm so glad that you're out teaching doctors about vitamin D, because I test vitamin D levels in my patient population, and to a person, they are too low. Until we start working on their vitamin D level correction, they are down in either rank deficiency or insufficiency levels." So thank you, National Academy of Sciences and Institute of Medicine, for making recommendations that don't actually support the reality of healthy vitamin D levels in our North American population. And no wonder people are confused. So what we know is that white blood cells, when they're not acting appropriately, deposit cholesterol inside the blood vessel wall. That causes inflammation. The lining thickens, and what you have is atherosclerosis. So there's a vitamin D story that came out this week. Here's another one. Loyola did a study finding that vitamin D may help prevent and treat diseases associated with aging. They said that evidence suggests an association between vitamin D deficiency and chronic diseases associated with aging, such as cognitive decline, depression, osteoporosis, cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and cancer. Vitamin D deficiency is a common, serious medical condition that significantly affects the health and well-being of every American. Older adults in particular are at risk for vitamin D deficiency because of diet, because of reduced time outdoors, because wearing sunscreen leads to poor skin absorption of vitamin D. So the bottom line is supplemental vitamin D is necessary. Do not go another year without having your vitamin D level tested. I cannot stress the importance of this enough. Finally, a study in young women linked low vitamin D levels to depression. We all know that we feel better when we get out and get some sunshine, don't we? You know, it's getting back to the time where the sun is staying up longer and the sun is brighter, and we'll be able to make adequate vitamin D if we get out for even 20 to 30 minutes a day, but not if we wear sunscreen. So we've got a conundrum there, and that means vitamin D supplements are a safe way to protect your skin, but also make sure that you have adequate vitamin D. OSU researchers found that young women with lower levels of vitamin D were more likely to have clinically significant depressive symptoms over the course of a 5-week study. The results were consistent even when the researchers took other explanations into account, like time of year, whether or not the women exercised, and also time spent outside. Depression has multiple powerful causes, and if vitamin D is part of the picture, it's important not to be deficient in vitamin D. And last week I talked about vitamin D being critical for the production of serotonin, which is the antidepressant neurotransmitter in the brain. You just can't overstress the importance of vitamin D in human health. This is Food for Thought. I'll be back after these messages. Please stay with me.
Concerned about diabetes? Carlson NutriSupport Diabetes is a unique formula containing nutrients that support the health of individuals with diabetes or pre-diabetes. Two easy-to-swallow soft gels supply over 25 nutrients, including important omega-3s from fish oil. Carlson NutriSupport Diabetes supports a healthy heart, brain, and nerves, healthy vision, and healthy circulation. Ask for Carlson NutriSupport Diabetes at finer health food stores today. Or go to carlsonlabs.com to find the location of the store nearest you. Carlson NutriSupport Diabetes. Ask for it today. Medical scientists worldwide are encouraging people to eat more fish. And most American diets are low in important omega-3 oils. Omega-3 oils are the vital components of fish that provide numerous health benefits. Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gems supply concentrated amounts of these omega-3 oils that are needed to support vision, brain function, and a healthy heart. Each great-tasting Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gem soft gel contains 1,250 milligrams of fish oil from deep, cold-water fish. That supplies a full 800 milligrams of omega-3s, all in only one easy-to-swallow soft gel. You can take Carlson fish oils with confidence, for they are tested for purity, potency, and freshness by an independent FDA-registered laboratory. Ask for Carlson Elite Omega-3 Gems at your favorite natural food retailer today.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. I'm your host, Jolie Root. I'm a nutritionist, I'm a nurse, and I have a social media life. And if you miss me between radio programs, you can certainly catch up with me on Twitter. I'm at Jolie Root on Twitter. It's a very positive Twitter stream, not like some of the tweet streams that have been in the news lately. Good grief. I like to talk about health and how people can stay healthy naturally. I also have a blog, Red Wine, Green Tea, and Dark Chocolate. It's easier to find than that. JolieBlogs.com. My name is J-O-L-I-E, JolieBlogs.com. And on there I post stories about how to stay healthy, and I have links to this radio program so that you can listen live at your computer. And I also have a podcast link so that if you want to catch the show that was on last week and you missed it, you can go, and I've got it up on my podcast link. So you can stay in touch with me. Food for Thought Radio has a Facebook page. You can like me on Facebook. But one way or another, you can keep up with me between programs. I talk a lot about the Mediterranean diet for good reason. It's delicious, for starters, and I'm a foodie. I'm the first one to admit, not just because I'm a nutritionist and I know that foods can make us healthy. I love to eat, don't you? I mean, I think that we all deserve to have an awesome relationship with food. So there's a compound in the Mediterranean diet that I want to spend some time on today, and it starts with olives. And there was a very interesting story, and there's a study that is underway now, and they're going to take a look at olives protecting against memory loss. Now, I love olives. I love the green ones, and I love the black ones, and I love the oil-cured ones. And when my daughter's home from college, she's got a favorite pasta that I make, a kind of a puttanesca sauce with oil-cured olives as the little salt bombs that really give it flavor. You know, it's just incredible. You couldn't make the sauce without them. But who knew that olives protect your memory? Now, it has long been seen that people that follow a Mediterranean diet and stay physically and mentally active are less likely to suffer from dementia. And the older I get, the more that is something that I'm very interested in. But olives in particular appear to play a key role in this regard. So there's a study getting put together now to find out exactly what are the substances in olives that are so valuable. And the idea is there are polyphenols. Those are antioxidant compounds in olive oil. Sometimes you'll notice there's a little bit of a bitter taste with olive oil. I don't know if you've ever tasted something like ibuprofen, if one is ever dissolved in your mouth and there's that kind of bitter back of the throat taste. They're very similar. And there are anti-inflammatory compounds in these olive polyphenols, but they want to take a look and see whether or not the polyphenols in olives might help to protect against or even cure Alzheimer's disease. And of course, you know what's going to happen. Biotech, they're going to extract the plant substances and probably try to make these substances in a more pure and more defined form. Nutritional neuroscience, it's a working group at the Goethe University in Frankfurt. They're going to take a look at olive substances, first testing them in cell culture models to see if they're protective against Alzheimer's. They're focusing on changes to the powerhouses of nerve cells, which are mitochondria. And those are the energy producers in all of our cells. And the mitochondria suffer damage and changes early on in Alzheimer's disease. So they want to take a look. They're testing a hypothesis that the polyphenols in olives slow down the disease processes in the brain, improve mitochondrial dysfunction, and provide evidence to suggest that they protect against Alzheimer's disease. You're not going to need to wait for them to find out whether or not that's the case, because I'm here to tell you that olives are one of the healthiest foods that you can consume, and olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, well, you can think of it as liquid gold. Homer, the famous Greek poet, called olive oil liquid gold. If we say that we are what we eat, what would happen if you consumed olive oil every day? Well, I advocate that you do, that be the oil that you use in your cooking on a daily basis. And it's subtle, it's aromatic. Extra virgin olive oil is something that really enhances the flavor of the Mediterranean diet. That is one of the key factors of the Mediterranean diet. When you go to my blog, joliblogs.com, on the column on the right, when you scroll down on that front page, you'll find a word cloud. And look for Mediterranean or Mediterranean diet and click on that. And you'll go to some pages. Just look for Mediterranean diet in the blog, because there are pages there that describe with a lot of description how to produce for yourself a Mediterranean diet. But there are some great benefits of the Mediterranean diet, and I want to go through some of those. Reducing type 2 diabetes, something that's come up in today's discussion quite a lot. The Mediterranean diet, rich in olive oil, reduces the risk of type 2 diabetes by almost 50% compared to a low-fat diet. This was according to a big study in Spain. The low-fat diet, I'm going to spend a lot of time in the next segment on all the things we think we know about fat that we're wrong about. And by we, I don't mean probably you or me, but I do mean most of the mainstream nutrition experts that have just been absolutely wrong about fat for the last 30 years. So that's in the next segment. It's coming up. But the Mediterranean diet, compared to the low-fat diet, 50% reduction in risk of type 2 diabetes. Now, one of the things that's true about olive oil is it makes you feel full, so it has an impact on weight loss. In one study, participants ate low-fat yogurt over a period of 3 months, and they had four edible fats. There were four groups. One was lard, one was butterfat, one was grapeseed oil, and one was olive oil. Olive oil had the biggest satiety effect. It made the people feel satisfied better than any of the other fats. And also, by the way, the olive oil group had a higher concentration of serotonin, which is a satiety hormone, in their blood. What helps you make serotonin? Omega-3 and vitamin D. But the olive oil group had more serotonin in their blood also, and participants reported that they found the olive oil yogurt very filling. Olive oil is good for a healthy heart. It slows down the aging of the heart. People who consume olive oil regularly are less likely to develop cardiovascular diseases. I'm telling you, throw out the safflower oil, throw out the corn oil, throw out the sunflower oil. They're loaded with omega-6, which converts to arachidonic acid and promotes inflammation, narrowing of the blood vessels, cardiovascular disease. Cook with olive oil, which is predominantly a monounsaturated oil rich in omega-9. Here's another benefit. Olive oil helps to lower bad cholesterol and raise good cholesterol. Cardiovascular outpatients that were given olive oil supplementally once a day for 6 weeks had a decline in their total bad cholesterol to good cholesterol ratios. So it helps your lipids. Olive oil helps with bone health. People that consume olive oil have higher levels of osteocalcin protein. I was trying to say calcium there. Osteocalcin is the bone-building protein, and it has a protective effect on bones. Olive oil boosts osteocalcin. Here's something funny. It reduces earaches caused by ear wax. Olive oil in your diet can help to soften and reduce the amount of earwax in your ears. That's something we've never talked about before on Food for Thought. It also lowers depression. In one study, it was found that people who regularly consume trans fats had a 48% higher risk of developing depression compared to those that consumed olive oil. Trans fats are those fats that are found in refined and processed foods. Movie theater popcorn is one of the highest sources of trans fats in North America. And I don't mean just the stuff that you buy when you're at the theater, which is a huge source of calories. I also mean the little boxes of movie theater butter flavored popcorn that you get at the grocery store. It is one of the highest sources of trans fats in our diet. 48% higher risk of developing depression in people that consume trans fats, think junk foods, regularly compared to people who consume olive oil. Did you know you can use olive oil in your hair? It softens your hair and it repairs damage. And when you eat olive oil, it helps your hair and your skin from the inside out because it's rich in vitamin A, vitamin B1 and B2, vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin E, vitamin K, and iron. Olive oil protects against colon cancer and ulcerative colitis, protecting against bowel cancer. This was research in 28 countries. People with a high consumption of oleic acid, which is a component of olive oil, had a 90% lower risk of developing ulcerative colitis compared to those that had a low consumption. Olive oil nourishes your skin. It's often used for skin conditions like eczema or psoriasis. It's protective against melanoma. In University of Tel Aviv, they found that consuming olive oil and other Mediterranean foods could be countering the oxidizing effect of the sun. This is interesting. Only 3 in every 100,000 residents of countries in the Mediterranean ever develop any form of skin cancer. Olive oil increases the production of protein peptides that support healthy digestion. So, wow, there really is a lot to say, isn't there, about olive oil. And then finally, people that eat a healthy diet reduce their risk of cardiovascular disease by 33% when they're over the age of 40. Just looking at a diet that is higher in fruits and vegetables and oily fish, no other changes, replacing refined carbohydrates with whole grains and restricting intake of sugar and salt, reduced heart disease by a third in people between the ages of 40 and 70. This diet stuff really makes a difference. This is Food for Thought. I'll be right back after these messages. Please stay with me.
Why is vitamin D so important? Because it supports and promotes calcium absorption, healthy bones, healthy mood, cardiovascular health, and a healthy immune system. Are you getting enough vitamin D? It's important to us. Carlson features many products with vitamin D, including vitamin D soft gelatin capsules, liquid drops, and vitamin D in combination with fish oils. Carlson provides natural vitamin D3 to support healthy body levels of vitamin D. Ask for Carlson Vitamin D at finer health food stores today. Or go to carlsonlabs.com to find the location of the store nearest you. Carlson is an easy way to get your vitamin D. Have you heard about Carlson Super 2 Daily? No doubt you've heard about the benefits of eating more fish, but most of us don't eat omega-3 rich fish every day. Carlson Super 2 Daily is like having a serving of light tuna when you take your multivitamin. Take your vitamins, minerals, and a dose of Heart Smart omega-3s all in one formula, two soft gels. Carlson Super 2 Daily. It's the perfect foundation for your supplement program. Carlson Super 2 Daily is a comprehensive, balanced formula supplying essential vitamins and minerals in just two easy-to-swallow soft gels.
Plus, Carlson Super 2 Daily provides the omega-3s EPA and DHA to support the heart, nerves, brain, and the eyes. Purity, potency, and freshness are always guaranteed. Look for Carlson Super 2 Daily at finer health food stores today.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. I'm your host, Julie Root. Don't forget about the link to the podcasts if you want to hear the program again. Today's show will be up probably a little bit later today, but certainly by tomorrow. And you can find that at JolieBlogs.com. It's right in the very top right section on the first page of that blog. There was an interesting team of researchers that discovered a new alternative in the treatment of female pattern hair loss. Hair loss is something that's pretty distressing for people, particularly, though, for women. Scientists found that taking a nutritional supplement improves the overall scalp coverage and hair condition. So this was research in France, Italy, and the U.S. It was a combination of specific omega-3 and 6 fatty acids and antioxidants. The omega-6 was GLA. So that is a beneficial omega-6. It's not the same as the linoleic acid that's in most of the vegetable cooking oils. GLA comes from things like evening primrose oil or borage or black currant seed oil. A 369 supplement is something that is available, and it usually will have GLA in it. You can take a fish oil supplement with GLA. But what they found was that there is the female pattern hair loss is a decrease in central scalp density in hair. It's a reduction in the numbers of hairs, but it's very distressing, and it affects up to half of people over the age of 50. Taking the supplements for 6 months improved hair density and improved the thickness. Now, there's no question that nutrition influences shininess and lustrousness of hair, but what they looked at was omega-3, omega-6, and some antioxidants. So the antioxidants were vitamin E, vitamin C, and lycopene, which is found in tomatoes. So what does that mean? Well, you can take an antioxidant formula, or you should probably be taking a multivitamin that has vitamin C and vitamin E in it. Eating lots of cooked tomato products, tomato paste, making tomato sauce with your Mediterranean diet recipes. When you cook the tomatoes, it concentrates the lycopene. Taking fish oils and taking a GLA supplement, that's what we're talking about. It improved hair loss and volume, shine, and softness. So that's something to think about. Now, I said I was going to wax poetic a little bit about dietary fat and cholesterol. And there has been some very incompetent nutrition advice being spread over the last several decades, starting in about the 1960s and 70s, where a lot of very outspoken, and I'm doing air quotes with my fingers, picture that in your mind, nutrition experts believed that saturated fat was the main cause of heart disease, raising the bad cholesterol in the blood. And this was the cornerstone of the low-fat diet. So one of the worst pieces of dietary advice was that the low-fat, high-carb diet was an optimal human diet. And it got involved in politics and really bad political decisions. And this diet began being recommended to all Americans in 1977. And at the time, there wasn't a single study on that diet. So you became participants in the largest uncontrolled experiment in history, and it did not turn out well. We are still suffering the consequences. The obesity epidemic started at almost exactly the same time that the low-fat dietary guidelines came out, and the diabetes epidemic followed right after that. Now, correlation doesn't prove causation, but people started eating less of healthy foods like meat and butter and eggs and eating more processed foods that were high in sugar and refined carbohydrates. Now, in the meantime, the low-fat diet has been thoroughly studied in the past few years. It was put to test in the biggest controlled trial in nutrition history, which was the Women's Health Initiative. But the low-fat diet turned out to be harmful, not beneficial, because it made important risk factors worse. It raised triglycerides, it lowered the good cholesterol HDL, and it made the LDL particles smaller. And that's a miserable result, because the smaller the LDL is, the more it promotes the blood vessel disease. Another really bad piece of advice was that cholesterol-rich foods like eggs were bad for us. And the nutrition professionals demonized eggs, which are among the healthiest foods on the planet. The nutrients in an egg, yes, it contains cholesterol, but there is absolutely no evidence that cholesterol in the diet raises the bad cholesterol in the blood. Hear that again. There is absolutely no evidence that the cholesterol that you eat raises bad cholesterol or increases your risk of heart disease. Eggs raise HDL, the good cholesterol. They're also loaded with vitamins and minerals and essential fatty acids, phospholipid DHA, which is critically important for your eyes and your brain. DHA, the only other place that you can get that in the diet is fish and fish oil, but egg yolks are full of it if the chickens are fed the right food. And ridiculously less expensive than buying phospholipid omega-3 supplements like krill, which is not on my list of favorite things. It's ridiculously expensive. Here was another bad fat-related understanding that was completely wrong, that the total and LDL cholesterol levels were good indicators of heart attack risk. It's more complicated on that. You just cannot focus on total and LDL cholesterol, because total cholesterol includes a lot of good things, including HDL. When you have a high HDL, which is a very good thing, it actually raises your total cholesterol number. And LDL isn't just LDL. There are subtypes. The small, dense LDL particles are very bad. The large, fluffy ones are good. The small particles are associated with heart disease. The large ones are benign. Compared to other markers, total and LDL cholesterol are really kind of poor indicators of risk. You'd be better off to look at your triglyceride HDL ratio. One study found out that patients, and this was 250,000 patients they looked at, hospitalized for heart disease, half of them had normal LDL levels. And when you get older, the higher your cholesterol, the lower your risk for heart disease, when I'm saying over the age of 70. And cholesterol levels that are too low are associated with an increased risk of death from other causes like cancer and suicide. Another misunderstanding was that processed seed and vegetable oils were healthy. We only started consuming those about 100 years ago because we didn't have the technology to process them until then. And now I'm talking about soybean, corn, and cottonseed oils. They're very high in polyunsaturated omega-6 fatty acids, which are harmful in excess and contribute to inflammation. There are multiple studies showing that they increase the risk of heart disease. And a lot of the nutrition organizations still recommend those. You know, there's money behind that. Here was another misunderstanding. Saturated fat raises your bad cholesterol and causes heart disease. That became public policy, but they were wrong. Saturated fat doesn't raise LDL that much. The effect is weak. It depends on the individual. What saturated fat does to LDL is it changes the particles from small, dense, very, very bad LDL to large, fluffy, mostly benign LDL. And saturated fat raises HDL, which is associated with a reduced risk of heart disease. If anything, saturated fats actually improve the lipid profile, not the other way around. There isn't evidence that saturated fat increases the risk of heart disease. Many studies confirm that saturated fat is harmless. The anti-saturated fat movement was propaganda. So remember, saturated fats and trans fats are nothing alike, and trans fats that have been chemically modified to be more solid and have a longer shelf life, so think partially hydrogenated fats, are nasty. There's no level that's healthy. They're highly toxic. They cause insulin resistance, inflammation. They raise your risk of heart disease, cancers. So really, when it comes to fats, if you really want to avoid chronic disease, eat your butter, have some meat. You can use coconut oil, but avoid the trans fats. Your life depends on that. Use olive oil. Take your fish oil supplements. Another myth to dispel is that eating fat makes you fat and that high-fat diets are dangerous. Yeah, fats have more calories, but actually diets that are high in fat are fulfilling. They make you feel satisfied, and it's kind of hard to overeat them. Diets that are high in fat and low in carbs usually cause more weight loss than diets that are low in fat. And the low-carb, higher-fat diets also increase HDL. They reduce triglycerides. They stabilize blood sugar and insulin levels. They lead to abdominal fat loss. And they improve the size of those really harmful, very small LDL particles. And you know that margarine is not better than butter. You know that butter is better. And I like the grass-fed butter. And the cause to celebrate these days is that the grass-fed butter is everywhere in the grocery stores now. The Irish butters and the other grass-fed butters are available in everyday supermarkets now. It's worth a little bit of extra money to have that. So kind of get clear on the fats. You're going to want to download this podcast if this is all news to you and listen to it over again. We've been told some very wrong things about fats in the diet. That's it for me this week. Thank you so much for spending this hour with me. You can't know what it means to me. Thank you so much. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll be back next Friday with another Food for Thought.
You've been listening to Food for Thought with Jolie Root, sponsored by Carlson Laboratories. Tune in again next time as Jolie Root sifts through medical research and expert opinions for practical advice to help you take control of your health naturally and live well every day. Food for Thought, Fridays at 10 a.m. on 1160 WVNJ.